Switzerland! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Lloyd will try a long hit. What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome in everybody to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As always, on the heels of the Killer Bees, Joel and Jeremy, a big thank you to them for promoting our guests on the show tonight. Veljko Panovic, the head coach of Tigres, will be joining us tonight, as well as the Houston Dynamo general manager, Pat Onstad. I'll tell you what I'm going to get into them with in a minute here. But we stream at ESPN975.com. And again, the call-in number is 713-780-3776. Good Leagues Cup stuff tonight. Four out of the five games tonight are Liga MX teams against Major League Soccer teams. You got San Luis against Montreal. You got Pachuca Red Bulls, which that ought to be a good one. Minnesota Necaxa. LAFC Vancouver, I'm going to pass on that, but I am going to watch Monterrey Rayados against Austin FC up in Austin. And producer Guillermo has proudly got his Rayados shirt on tonight. That's a dangerous thing to do during Tigres week, my friend. And, of course, on a night when we have Veljko Panovic on the show.
It's funny because we've had several Tigres, like, you know, we've had fan groups. We had the guy, our friend yesterday, and every time any Tigres guy comes to the station, I have to wear Rayados. I have to.
Yeah, I see what you're doing there. A confrontation at the station. We got a show to do here. Eye on the prize. All right, 713-780-3776. So you got Tigres and Puebla tomorrow night. Saturday, you got Tigres and Inter Miami. Of course, we mentioned Messi may not play in that. Tickets at LSSE.net. Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets. I mean, you think of who's there. Suites are available for that. That's going to be a big party. I'd get out there to that. I am going to that. That's Lone Star Sports and Entertainment, LSSE.net. Tigres Inter Miami. You know, the big question is, will Messi... I bet you Messi will be here and he'll make an appearance and, you know, walk on the field maybe. From the bench, but look, the man got injured. What are you supposed to do? And not a bad thing watching Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets, guys that have won World Cups and Champions League, right? And, of course, it's Tigres. André-Pierre Gignac, Juan Bruneta. All kinds of talent on that team. Got Diego Reyes, who's a gold medal winner with Hector Herrera. Speaking of the Olympics and medals, guess what? The U.S. is bagging a lot of medals. Team gymnastics, what else did they win today, Guillermo? I mean, it's crazy, but the team gymnastics win on the women's side was fantastic. I watched our local Simone Biles do very, very well. But good news on the men's Olympic side. The men defeated Guinea 3-0. They have advanced. They've got 7 goals in 2 games now. Started real quick in this one. They came out with a real vengeance and a real effort and engagement. Jordi Mihailović in the 14th.
Mihailović poised that two-man U.S. ball. Try and unsight the goalkeeper. Mihailović! Oh, it's fantastic! What a wonderful goal! Special times, special moments. The USA lead, Georgi Mihailović, a wonderful free kick.
The beauty of that set piece. He is a heck of a set piece taker. That's another reason he got picked as an overage player by Marko Mitrovic. By the way, Marko Mitrovic was an assistant coach with Veljko Panovic, who obviously is the Tigres manager, who's going to be interviewed tonight on this show, back in 2015 when Serbia won the under-20 FIFA World Cup. Now, after The full men's World Cup, the under 20 World Cup, is the most coveted thing to win. And that opened a lot of doors for his coaching career. We talk about that tonight with him. Popovich also will address in this interview. I asked him what type of coach he is. I asked him about changing the playing style now at Tigris into one that includes a higher press beyond just the possession game and the methodical build. So there's a lot of interesting stuff in there tonight. And the nice thing about him as a coach, Veljko Popovich, he likes to talk. And there's a lot of good information in there if you are a Tigris fan tonight. And then you got Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. If you went and listened to my last segment last night, there's a lot of similarities in what I said last night about, you know, what are the Dynamo going to do? Are they going to remain very cautious? Are they going to get a couple of wingers? I would imagine they're going to continue playing the exact same way they are. They're always in games. They're not winning at home, though. That's a bit of a problem. But I think unless they hit a drought and a bad patch, I don't know if they're going to alter their tactics. They're still going to try to integrate, I think, Ezequiel Ponce and Lawrence Sonali in the current setup. But I think I did make some good points last night. Your width on the right side a lot of times comes late when defenses are settled. We've been saying that all year. You have an inverted winger. Can you get two wingers on the field? I don't know. You know, it all depends on if you want to break the game model and the structure, and that's going to come down to Ben Olsen and what he's going to want to do. But these are good problems to have, not bad ones. That's for sure. Kevin Paredes in the 31st makes it 2-0 for the U.S. Olympic team on the men's side.
Yaibert, who hit the post, but the USA coming forward now. Paredes! What a beautifully worked goal to make it 2-0!
So Paredes gets a pair in this. It ends up 3-0. So here's what's happening now. For the first time since 2000, heading to the knockout stage. Listen to who was on the 2000 Olympic team. Dynamo manager Ben Olsen, Dynamo owner Tim Howard, Austin FC coach Josh Wolf, and 18-year-old Landon Donovan was on that team in 2000. And then an 18-year-old DeMarcus Beasley was an alternate. So it's pretty interesting because, as we all know, in 2002, that's when the likes of DeMarcus and Landon had that World Cup where the U.S. upset Portugal under Bruce Arena in the World Cup. And the U.S. will take on Morocco. The other good news in this now is France will take on Argentina. So a heavyweight's going to get knocked out in the other bracketing in one of the quarterfinals. You get past Morocco and you get to the semis, could look pretty good for the U.S. men's Olympic team. U.S. women's national team has already advanced. The thing I like now is both these teams have what I see now. And granted, this isn't French competition. You know, the last two games for the men was New Zealand and Guinea. It doesn't matter. Got seven goals. You did the business. You did it with a lot of a validation and a real thrust to it. Seven goals in two games is a great way to be heading into the semifinals with confidence. The U.S. will take on Morocco. But the three front runners, a lot of good movement and mobility. Kevin Paredes. You had Paxton Aronson. And then thinking of the third one. Who's the third guy for the U.S.? And I'm blanking here right now. But the third guy up front for the U.S. also, it's all movement and mobility out of those three. And it's all good stuff. It's Paredes. It's
Griffin Yao.
Yes, thank you. Griffin Yao got the start, who, by the way, kind of blossomed here to make the team. Griffin Yao had some good moments today. Thank you for that. That's producer extraordinaire Guillermo Lazo Romero. And then on the women's side, you know, you got Trinity Rodman, you got Mallory Swanson, formerly Mallory Pugh, and you've got movement and mobility there as well, Sophia Smith as well. So nice three sets for both of these teams now that are a challenge to play against. It's a very, very good thing for the U.S. Tonight, the game I'm focused on is Austin FC and Monterrey Rayados. That'll be at 8 o'clock, and that'll be on all those games are on Apple. Pachuca Red Bulls, Minnesota Necaxa, and then Monterrey Austin, LAFC Vancouver. Okay, so Veljko Popovich addresses a lot of things tonight. System, I mentioned that. So we're happy that he's going to be getting us all prepared for the Puebla game tomorrow night. Now, there's 50,000 tickets out for the Inter-Miami game against Tigres on Saturday. Granted, part of that was buoyed by Messi. I'm very interested to see the Tigres turn out tomorrow night because I'm sure a lot of people, if they were picking one or the other games, they're probably going to Messi and Inter-Miami over Puebla. Puebla, you can, you know, see in Liga MX play. But they are coached by Chepo de la Torre. So I am going to say I'm going to predict about 15, 16,000 tomorrow at Shell Energy. I think Libres y Locos will be out there. I don't know what you think, Guillermo, but I think there's going to be a good show tomorrow night. I hope there is because I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to that game.
I mean, it's Liga MX coming to Houston. We know people watch Liga MX here, so I don't doubt it.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, I was thinking today about the setup with two championships, 17 games in each half of the season. You know, every 6 months you award a title to a team in Liga MX. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Because there's only 17 games, puts a little bit more pressure on you, I think. I don't know if you think the same way I do. Because I think in MLS, you know, we're starting to get into the money time, right? We're starting to, you know, we know we got Leagues Cup. We know everybody's kind of fine-tuning their teams or integrating new players. And then we're in the home stretch for the 9 to 11 games to end the season, depending on what team you are, right? And it's all about now momentum, integrating new guys, keeping people fresh, staying injury-free, but going on that roller coaster ride of the playoffs in MLS. And that's when we get our best soccer as well. But I'm wondering, do you think, like I do, that because it's 17 games, there is more pressure on each singular game? Because if you had a bad run of 5 or 6 games, it could cost you.
Over the years, the concept of Liguilla has developed. Now it's changed. But I do agree with you. You know, only 17 games, and not only is there, you know, less time, but you actually play against one team once. So it's like, for example, like Tigres and Rayados, it's whoever gets that regular season win, like it matters a lot to the fans, to the city, etc. And they won't see each other again until potentially the playoffs. So I feel like that also adds to that whole.
Yeah, and you only get them either, you know, the second part of the Apertura and Clausura. You might get them away in the first one and you might get them at home in the second one. Interesting, Milan and Man City. Pep Guardiola comes out on the field. Zlatan and Ibrahimovic, we all know about their struggles at Barcelona. Comes out, goes right up to Zlatan, says hello. And Zlatan looked very uncomfortable. I don't know if you saw that video.
Yeah.
But he looked uncomfortable. And Guardiola went right up to him, shook his hand, said hello. And I think Zlatan was a little put off. All right. Taking a break. We're going to come back. Veljko Panovic, the head coach at Tigres, is coming up. A big thank you to everybody out at Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10, and the Marquee Entertainment Center. Bangers and Mash, all the traditional English food, great beer offering, great whiskey offering. Big shout out to Little Patagonia Empanadas, my good man Sebastian. Tonight, they will be selling those at Q2 Stadium in Austin. They're going to move them. We have a Houston location as well. Get them. Little Patagonia Empanadas. And then a big shout out to our friends at Cactus Music. All the best in vinyl CDs and everything else when it comes to rock and roll, including T-shirts and really cool books, everything. You go in there, you're probably not going to leave for a couple of hours. And then a big thank you to my friend Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture. Taking a break, coming back. Tigres Talk, Veljko Panovic, their manager.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Big shout out here to Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 and the Marquee Entertainment Center. Get in there, all the best in British foods. Great beer selection, great whiskey selection. It's Hugh O'Connor's Pub, and people will be getting ready for the upcoming Premier League season as well. Our next guest,
was a coach in Major League Soccer with the Chicago Fire. Also led in 2015 Serbia to the Under-20 World Cup Championship. His assistant coach on that team was Marko Mitrovic. He has coached Chivas. He is now the head coach of Tigres. Tigres in town right now, tomorrow night, to take on Puebla in the League's Cup. He is Veljko Panovic. Well, Veljko, just start off by just talking about how things have been ahead of this Puebla game here in Houston.
Yeah, so far so good. Although yesterday we had to be redirected to San Antonio due to some flight condensation. But yeah, it's just the circumstantial, and we are very excited to be here. The players are in a good mood, and we've been working the first part of the season in Mexico pretty well. So we see this as a continuation of our build-up into the season, where we believe that Leagues Cup is a great opportunity for us and for all the teams that are coming from Mexico to excel. I think it's going to be a very interesting tournament this year.
Obviously, you come from another big club, Chivas. Now you're with Monterrey, and here in Houston, we know how well-supported they are and around the country. Just explain to my listeners the intensity maybe of the pressure of being the manager of Tigres.
Yeah, I mean, both teams you mentioned, I've coached and I'm coaching now, have a huge fans base, and they have huge expectations about the team. They've been all successful in the past. In the recent years, Tigres, in the last 10 years, I think it's the Mexican team that won more titles, not only in Mexico, but at the continent too. So there's a lot of good vibes and good expectations from our fans. And every tournament, every competition, every opportunity to measure the team against the other best teams in the world, in this case, in the MLS and Mexico, it's another excitement for our fans, and they always expect the best. We believe we have a very good players. We also believe that we've been doing so far very good. We started the season pretty well, so now we have to show that the team is ready for another very, very hard challenge that we're going to have.
By the way, Tigres beat Necaxa, drew Atlas, beat America, and beat Santos. So they're undefeated in four rounds of Liga MX with their manager, Veljko Panovic. Veljko, having been on both sides of this, I mean, obviously a Chicago Fire head coach and now in Liga MX, maybe the differences in the league. I know this is an age-old question, but I'll ask it anyway. What are some of the differences you see? And that could include maybe things like healthy pressure off the field.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I think there's a cultural context. There's a difference between the recruitment and the profiles of the players, and all that. I think it's getting more even in the last years. I think MLS and Liga MX is very. Which I think Leagues Cup showed that and proved that last year. It's getting very, very tight. The challenge between the teams, between the two leagues, it's every time much more even. Although that I still think the seasons, as they overlap in different part of the year, have their it takes its toll, right? So I believe that the schedule, it's the main challenge. In order to see the best from every team, we have to be in the same timeline, I believe, as the leagues and competitions.
He's Veljko Panovic. He's the head coach of Tigres. Long playing career. I got to tell you, I mean, your career is amazing, both as a player, all the different countries you were involved in. And I believe it was 2015 when you led Serbia to the Under-20 title. How did that change your life? Because that is a significant, significant accomplishment. And I would imagine it opened doors for your coaching careers further.
Absolutely. Although I've had a pretty good and known player career. You know, when you're done with playing, you're starting all over. Yeah, it helps your past. It helps your background. But you have to prove yourself. And in my first tenure as a coach, after 3 years, we were able to manage and bring and win the World Cup in New Zealand with under-20s, with Serbia playing a fantastic final against Brazil, winning in the 118 minutes in extra time, the 2-1 win. So that was definitely a trampoline for me and my career as a coach. And now, well, since then, I've been working almost every year. I was with a team and building my career, my knowledge, my experience, the same as I was learning a lot from people I met along the way.
Belko Panovich joining us. You felt the vibe of the Tigres fan in Houston. I know you know that, and the support for the Tigres fan base here, and Libres y Locos, and all these fan bases. It's pretty exceptional here in Houston. We feel it all the time. André Pierre Gignac, just talk to me about managing such a historic figure for this club.
Yeah, he's first of all, he wants to win every game, every practice. He wants to be the first in everything he does. Very good pro, and his career talks for itself. I believe the fact that he always, as I mentioned, always wants to do his best and win in every challenge he has in front of him, it carries him on. It carries him on, and even that he's in his late 30s, he still takes care, very good care of himself. He's a very good mentor to an example to the young players and those players that are not young anymore too. So, you know, it's a pleasure being working with him, and we look further up to take more from everything he can bring to the table, and his experience means a lot to our team.
So in the past, maybe Tigres might have been known as maybe a team with a little bit more of a methodical buildup, a little bit more maybe possession-oriented, methodical type of buildup. You are implementing something that's different now. After four games, how do you feel about maybe a little bit more of your pressing system and your idea about football and how your players are receiving it?
Yeah, we maintain the possession-oriented style, but we look to play on the opponent's half more often than playing between two boxes. I believe I'm very influenced from my experience in England with Reading in Championship, where I've learned how much excitement brings to the fans when they see their team attacking the box and being constantly a threat for the opponent, for the opposition. When you bring the ball to the final third, when you get your set pieces, when you execute the set pieces well, when you play passes forward without losing the identity of being a possession-oriented team, we look to orientate the possession-oriented team towards the opponent's goal, opponent's box. And at the same time, we have to be very good in executing our repress. After we lose the ball, we have to, in order to stay on the opponent's field, we have to be very good in those defensive transitions where we are able to be close to each other, so we can press immediately, win the ball back, and we don't have to run all the way back to our goal to defend and do the whole build up, which is never easy, you know. Even though we have a very good and talented players, you have also the opposition that it's not going to allow you to come to be a threat in front of their goal. So if you're capable of maintaining your opponent with and without the ball on their half, you will have definitely more opportunities to score, and you will bring more excitement to the fans.
Yeah, and I didn't insinuate that you were leaving the possession game, but I know you're implementing more of a pressing game and a repressing game. Is it sometimes hard when you come in as a new manager and you got to expect and put out to players that, hey, you're going to have to maybe do things a little bit differently and change your habits a little bit. That's got to be tough.
Well, you know, everything is about convincing people, especially in my job. And if you are capable of communicating your idea and supporting your idea with data and video, I think you have more chance to being given a chance to do what you want. And that's the methodology we have. But then you have to know, you know, the basics of the game. You have to know why you're doing, how you're doing in every position. And you have to make your players wanting to play that way. And this is something we look to from the first moment. We look to give the players the vision, and then give us a chance to try playing the way they give us a chance. Convincing, obviously, it's a little bit of individual work with the players, but once they start get going, they see the benefits of the way we want to play, and when that later it's transferred to the game and they see that things happen the way most of the time, because you can't predict everything. This is a very intense game with a lot of changes, very dynamic. But most of the time you have the things happening the way you kind of predict, or the way you want to conduct the game. And then the players get excited about it. They want it more. And they reviewing the videos, reviewing what we do and reviewing the data, they see themselves improving. They see that it works. And that's a great opportunity for the team to have the cohesion you want to have. And at the same time, as we always want to improve, you can make the next step forward in the direction you want to play and the direction in the vision of the team you want to be.
Fascinating. We're talking to Veljko Panović. Veljko, how would you describe yourself as a coach? Autocratic, democratic, down the middle? What? Taskmaster? How would you, if you looked at yourself, how would you describe yourself as a coach?
It's an interesting, very interesting
I finally question. Asked an interesting
I'll
question.
Give you a very quick answer. So I'll say situational. All of that depending on the situation. Sometimes you have to convince always. This is the word I was looking for when I stopped for a second. You have to seduce your players with your vision, with the way you want to play. And when you have that seducement done, then everything becomes an open field for creativity, for inspiration, and for excelling the talents of your team. And with that said, you don't have to be, although I said situational, most of the time you're going to always show the same vision of yourself, which is being supportive, which is being challenging, demanding. But most of the time, I want my players to feel that they have someone that they can rely on. I always say I want to develop everyone as a player, but also as a person. And my coaching is not only with the on the whiteboard or on the football board with videos and all that stuff. It's a lifestyle. I tell my players, you know, everything I tell, I have four kids, right? I have four kids. They all played or play soccer, football. And everything I tell them, I tell my kids. So if I say that it's not good to someone, if I say, if your body language is not good, you're showing something to your opponent, to your coaches, and to your fans. You got to change that. And this is the way how you can change it. This is what you have to think, because I've been there. I know how the things happen and what are the repercussions and the consequences of certain things that you manifest on the field or off the field. So I want to be a life coach. At the same time, I'm very passionate for the game. I'm looking to show my players that I'm creative and I'm not afraid to give anyone ideas that are maybe unconventional sometimes. And at the same time, I'm also not afraid to play young players, nor players that, and on my team, you have a lot of players that are veteran players. Some people describe them as old, which I don't like. I just think that you don't have to look in their passports and IDs what is their day of birth. You have to look the performance on the field and if there is the right attitude and if there is a right cohesion. So a little bit, maybe I gave you a long answer, but I was just inspired by you to do that.
It was a great answer. Listen, we got to let you go. Velko, thank you so much for everything. Continued success. It's been wonderful watching your career. And best of luck against Puebla tomorrow night.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks a lot.
All right. That's Velko Panovich, the head coach of Tigres. So that was Velko Panovich. A big thank you to him for coming on here and getting us up to speed on Tigres. Very, very interesting interview there as well. Big shout out here to Cactus Music. A big thank you to my buddy Quinn. Best in vinyl, best in CDs. It's like going into a music museum. You'll go in there, you may never come out. There's so much to look at, purchase. New and used vinyl. It is the legendary Cactus Music. We'll take a break. When we come back, it's time to visit with the Dynamo General Manager, Pat Onstad.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Dynamo in what I would call a very entertaining game against Atlas. Unfortunately, go down 1-0. They will play next Monday against Real Salt Lake. Get your tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. That's HoustonDynamo.com. And you know the great games the Dynamo have had with RSL. This time, they will need to probably win this game against Real Salt Lake. Joining us now, the Dynamo General Manager, Pat Onstad. Pat, you and I were talking before we got on tonight about the Atlas game and what an entertaining game that was. Let me take you back to your days in the Superliga and all the great competition, the Dynamo, when you were playing, you know, Miguel Calero, Pachuca, Club America, Chivas, it goes on and on.
Yeah, it was a fun competition. You know, we didn't get to play those guys as often, I think, as the players do now in our league, especially with League's Cup coming in here in its second year. But we had history also just in CONCACAF too, though, and playing them in Superliga. So that was nice. And that was a fantastic Pachuca team, if I'm not mistaken, went to Club World Cup one year when we were kind of playing against them. So it was a good measuring stick for our group.
How important do you think that was in the context of back then in earning respect? Because I think it's a little different now. It seems a lot closer now between Major League Soccer and Liga MX. Back then, it seemed like it was, hey, you know, we got to make a bit of a statement here because, you know, we're maybe looked down upon a little bit.
Yeah, there was a big gap. And back then, definitely was a big gap between the two leagues. I think we've closed the gap very quickly. And arguably, I think we're pretty close. Obviously, there's a few teams down there, Chivas, you know, Club America, Tigres, Monterrey, where the spend is astronomical in comparison to our group, our teams. But we're not far off, you know, the Miamis and Atlantas and stuff. We're getting pretty close. But back then for us, it was a nice measuring stick. And I think for a lot of the players, what was nice is, you know, I was fortunate. I played for my national team with Canada. So I had those experiences of playing against Mexico, at Azteca. And a lot of guys didn't get those opportunities. And while MLS was still growing, we weren't playing consistently in front of big crowds like we are now in our league. So for us, it was nice to go down to Pachuca. And I think they packed the stadium for one of the games, but it was a great experience for our guys and a measuring stick that unfortunately in the big game when we wanted to go through, we thought we could go through and lost, I believe it was 4-2 or 5-2. 5-4 in aggregate. It was a great experience for everybody. I'm sure something that still even to this day, I mean, certainly I remember it, and I didn't play. Zach Wells played in that game, but it was a fantastic game.
Boy, that was a name I forgot, Zach Wills. All right, yeah, he's Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. Let's get up with the current Dynamo right now. What's the sense after the Atlas game? I thought this was a great game of soccer. Maybe, as Ben Olsen said in the press conference, pretty much it was about one play, or maybe it would have went to penalties.
Yeah, it was about one play. I mean, they made it. We had a few opportunities as well. But if I'm being honest, and I think Ben would say the same, is we just didn't have that killer instinct in the game. We had a lot of possession. We got pretty comfortably up into their half and even their final third, but really didn't penetrate them enough. I mean, our opportunities came from almost transitional moments. We're a tough team because at times we expect Griffin Dorsey to go get high and get behind, but that takes time for him as a right back to make 80 yards of ground up to get behind. So therefore, at times, instead of us being quick in attack, we're pretty methodical. And when you're methodical, that gives the other team enough time to get their 8-10 guys behind the ball, and then it becomes difficult to break down. So I felt at times we didn't change the pace and attack that I think we have done so well. Vancouver's a great example of where we picked moments to go quickly. Brad Smith goal was a great example of a quick attack. And we were also patient at times and controlled a lot of that game too. So I think we're still finding that. And part of that is probably we have new personnel in our group, and we've got to find what works best for these guys to make sure they're successful as well.
So does that mean you're going to have to maybe take a little bit more risk in order to find that proper balance that maybe could take you over the top?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I can't say, that's up to Ben to make that decision. But certainly I think we have the firepower now in our group, that we can start looking to go after teams, and we're going to have to. Our schedule is very difficult down the stretch. We play, LAFC twice, Seattle twice, LA Galaxy. We're going to play some high scoring teams, RSL again. So, League's Cup and regular season. So we're going to have, if we're thinking we can go to those places or take them, and hold on 1-0, I think we're kidding ourselves. We're going to probably have to go and score 2 and 3 goals and against those good teams. And, I believe we have the guys that can do that now.
It's Pat Onstad, Dynamo General Manager. Let's talk a little bit about Ezequiel Ponce. Obviously, he's only played 110 minutes. He's getting a lot of judgment from the fans on a couple of games or minutes very, very quickly here. I saw him checking back into midfield, capable of providing the pass, good hold-up play, good things around the box. But you brought him here to be a goal scorer. Is there things that are going to need to be altered tactically or accommodated to get the best out of him?
Yeah, I think I talked about that even just a few minutes ago. As I think we're getting used to him and his style of play, it's nice. I mean, I think for a lot of the season, because Sebastian Ferrer was injured, we had Sebastian Kowalczyk, who's a false nine and drops in the midfield. But one of the things, like, we knew once we start playing with a nine, we've got to be able to, instead of always using the nine to overload the midfield, he's got to stay high and occupy the center backs and also be an option once we get into the box. So part of it is him getting used to staying higher, us getting used to not having that extra body in central midfield and being able to still break teams down. But I thought in Vancouver, in the 45 minutes there, I thought he was excellent for us. I thought he created opportunities out of his defensive work rate and at times played very simple. I thought against Atlas, at times he dropped into midfield maybe more than we'd hoped. But that was part of the game. We were very slow, as I said before, and building up. And at times, as you're a forward, if you're waiting for a slow, methodical buildup, you're like, I'm never going to touch the ball until I drop here and get it. So that's something we've got to work on, but we will. He puts in an amazing amount of work. I mean, he, in the Vancouver game, I'll use an example, just because I know this off the top of my head, he ran 540 meters of high-speed distance. To put that in perspective, Griffin Dorsey's a guy that's usually our top guy, somewhere between 750 and 850 meters. And he's by far our top guy is a right back who has to get forward. And we had a forward in 45 minutes that would have, if he had maintained that for another 45, which would have been difficult. But still, that it shows he puts in a lot of work. And I think for us, that'll help us pressing the ball higher up the field. And maybe we can create opportunities that way, where right now we're probably not creating as many off of transitional moments as we would like.
It did seem like in the 110 minutes, he's playing a lot with his back to goal.
Yeah. We'll see. He's not a guy that we're going to see dribble at players and take them on. You know, one thing he can do is he can get a shot off pretty quickly in the box. He doesn't need much space to get that off. But he's a guy that we need in the box and he needs service. And you could see at times what he is good at is playing that final pass behind the line. But I don't think we were fully, you know, Coco's still getting used to him. Griff's timing getting forward. I thought Aliyu at times could have got behind the line a bit more often. And he can provide that pass, and then he'll be the first guy getting in the box too. So we've got some work to do to figure it out. But so far, we're pretty pleased with it. Now, maybe the fans aren't. I don't know the way you were insinuating. I don't know.
There was a lot of judgment passed over 110 minutes. I was just kind of like,
hey, sure, why not? Let's throw it in. Let's give this guy a chance to breathe here
before yeah. – You know, I mean, I hope I'm not judged on 90 minutes.
No, yeah, let's go. Let's go. That's it. He's done. He's finished. But no, I think we're excited, and we've seen enough that we're confident he's going to be a good fit for our group. But we also want competition. So we're happy Sebastian is pushing on and working hard, and we'll see where that takes us too. But it's nice having two options.
As much as you root for Sebastian to score goals, I mean, I got to think it's a new signing. You want him to hit the back of the net as quick as possible. Yeah. You know, if this moves on a couple games and you don't create, he doesn't get as many chances. I mean, he looks like the kind of guy that I want to score goals, and he's coming from a place he's scoring one out of two games at AEK yeah. Athens in Greece. So I'm assuming you're watching these games going, you know, I want you to hit the back of the net sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and he's had a couple of half looks. He hasn't really had any glaring ones where you're like, oh, he should score that. But he's had a couple of half looks, and we'll get him there. We're not concerned about that. We know it's the same thing with Sebastian. We know if Sebastian gets chances, he'll score goals too. So it's up for us now is to key in on how we're going to get those opportunities for these guys, and to make sure that we're able to do that. As I mentioned earlier, like, for us, I think for as far as we're going to go, we have an elite defensive block. We're very good defensively. Granted, once in a while, this year we have kind of shot ourselves in the foot at times. But if you take those goals out, which really are just some really bad individual mistakes this season, we've been as a group have been excellent. One of the top teams in the league statistically, and I think just even from the eye. So I feel our group to take the next step. And to be able to do well, a couple of things we focus on is to try to go score goals here. And I think, you know, we said we've got to be better on the road than we were last year, and we've been excellent on the road this year. So I'm really confident in our group. If we can figure out how to score goals, we'll be a real tough out here in come playoff time.
This is something we talked about on the radio, and you brought it up about Griffin Dorsey. A lot of times that width will come late, and defenses are settled. Is it possible you play with an Ollie and Aliyu on the field at the same time? I know Ben has kind of leaned towards keeping them both on the left and competing, but yeah. is that something you might have to consider at some point?
You might. I mean, that'll be Ben's call in terms of what he does. I don't think we really had that before unless you put Brad Smith and Aliyu on the right. So I think now he's got an option. I mean, and Ollie came in, granted he played 20, 25 minutes against an Atlas team that were pretty fatigued, I thought, at the time, and there was a lot of space. The game opened up, and you can see he's got elite pace, so that's nice to have. But at the end of the day, Ben will make those choices, and he's done a good job managing this group up to this point, and we'll have to see where it goes.
And Ali, obviously, everybody's buzzing about him and the turn of pace and some of the things he's brought, the youthfulness. I think the first ever German to play for the Houston Dynamo. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Someone told me that. I didn't know that. But, I don't think the club has gone outside of the U.S., certainly in the first. I think Landine was the first one we kind of went after. That I can remember off the top of my head. I guess Laval Palmer from Jamaica and stuff like that. But so maybe it is. That wouldn't surprise me.
So, I mean, I think this is a good thing, right? You wanted competition. You've built competition. This could lead to things maybe you guys don't even know about and realize right now as a couple of games go on here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not a secret. Ollie's played both sides. We knew that when we scouted him. But we also, we believe Griffin, he scored two goals, obviously, in Vancouver. But last year, when the big moments were needed, Griffin stepped up for us last year. He was excellent. He scored a huge goal in the US Open Cup final, but had some big goals down the stretch of the regular season. If I'm not mistaken, scored, I believe, in against Salt Lake in the playoffs. If I'm not mistaken, I could be off there. But he's a guy that we know in big moments makes big plays for us. So to go and say, hey, we're going to go with a winger up there, and you go, Griffin, you stay back. I don't know. I mean, Griffin's strength is an attacker, not necessarily the defender. So we'll see what happens. But it is nice having those options, and you don't know what each game's going to bring. You know, it's going to be interesting here. And if we have teams that are pressing and trying to go late, it might be a good time to put in a stay-at-home right back and throw in some speed up top. So I think there will be opportunity to try that out and see how it goes.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's very intriguing. We're talking to Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. Next up for the Dynamo is next Monday, and they will take on Real Salt Lake. That's a big win. The home record. Basically only 5 wins in about 15 games. A lot of draws. And then you got this incredible record on the road where you're one of only 6 teams, I think, in the league that's won 6 or more games on the road. Any sense we can make of this?
No, not at all. Because we definitely
think so, but
we love playing at home. Our surface is the best in the league. You know, we need that for the way we play with our guys and our combinations in the middle of the field in risky areas. And, you know, we struggle when we have to go in bad fields to play that way. We still try it, but it's dangerous. So it's tricky. I mean, these aren't excuses at all. I think last year, the nice thing about our home games, it seemed like every time we played a home game, it was 95 and with the heat index over 100. And this year, you know, we've had storms come in that have canceled games, or we've had things that it's been a lot cooler, hasn't been as difficult. But having said that, you know, we've had teams come in and, you know, their climate's 62 degrees and we're playing in 88 degrees. That's enough to melt them too. So we haven't been able to get that killer kind of instinct at home that we had last year, and something we need to develop, if we're going to be successful here down the stretch. But, certainly it's not from a lack of effort in terms of us trying to make everyone aware. You know, Ben does a great job in that. We've talked about it a lot. But the positive side is our road record's been, I hesitate to go that far back, but I can't remember the last time where the Dynamo had a winning record. So, on the road, and we played some really good stuff on the road, entertaining at times, maybe a little too entertaining Vancouver, but, you know, we've been really good on the road, and the guys have done the dirty work that it takes to win on the road, which is nice. I think last year we struggled with that. So, you know, if we can match last year's home record and this one's road record on the last 10 games, we'll be in great shape.
You guys have a huge data department. You do rely on that, like all pro clubs. Is there anything data-wise that points out to any reasons why the home results are not as good as the road?
No, not really. And, you know, we haven't dove into it and saying, like, what is it, home or away? I think we look more about how we're playing. We don't focus too much about how we don't change our style of play on the road as we play at home. We believe we're a team that can dominate the ball. I think for us, our big focus is, and I know Ben in the last couple of weeks have been working really hard on how do we get behind? How do we try to create more opportunities? And in all fairness, the last 10 league games, take the Atlas game aside, I think we've scored 23 goals in that time span, 2.3 goals a game. Our offense has really started to click, you know. Defensively, we had a little few wobbles, but like I said, I think that's certainly from the data standpoint, that's been more of an indication of individual mistakes rather than as a group. We've done a really good job of limiting teams' opportunities. You know, if I had one criticism, and I think Ben would probably be the first guy to say that, is defensive set pieces have been a concern all season for us, and that's cost us some points and some goals against here in the last 10 games. But, you know, we've lost league-wise, we've lost once in 10 games. That's a pretty good run. We've only won 5 of those, but I'm pretty happy with the way the guys are. This season right now is kind of trending upwards, which is nice.
Man, 2 of those were the big back-to-back wins on the road ahead of Leagues Cup San Jose and Vancouver. That Vancouver second half, although you probably were going up and down, that was a heck of an entertaining game.
My heart still beats a little too much here on this one.
That was a wild night. Hector Herrera last year had 17 assists. Doesn't seem to be, you know, he's obviously still the fulcrum of the team, the orchestrator of the team.
Yep.
But last year had this amazing season for me, as much as Luciano Acosta was the MVP. I thought he could have been too. 17 assists, 4 goals last year. not seemingly making, you know, the data stuff, goals and assists this year, special plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think also it's taken him a while he's played, you know, a fair amount of minutes. I would almost throw away as probably his first, you know, his first 5 or 6 games. He was just trying to get up to speed. So it's tough to kind of point the finger at him at that stage. But, you know, we need him to build. I think teams saw what he did last year. They zero on him and try not to give him a lot of time so he can play those balls from behind and dangerous passes. And also part of it is taking time for him to get fit, for him to be able to go make the first pass and then follow it up into the next line and now become a guy that's playing in the pocket and be able to play the final pass. You know, I think that's something that he'll have to continue to evolve. But, you know, there's probably a reason why our defensive record's pretty good this year, too, because he has been a little bit deeper. And when there's transition moments, instead of just Artur being on an island, he's got Hector there helping beside him. So, you know, there's some give and take both sides of it. But the fact we are scoring lots of goals of late is great. So maybe we don't need a 17 assists, although that would be nice if he can get up there again.
So when you go after guys like Ezequiel Ponce and Lawrence Anali, you know, you guys apparently, according to Asher Mendelson, you beat a lot of big clubs to get the signature of Anali. How did you do that?
Asher Mendelson is one of the guys, one of the reasons.
Asher do it?
Yeah. It had nothing to do with me. It was all Asher. No, it's the nice thing is both these signings for us, something that we're actually really proud of here is that this took every department. It took our scouting department, our analytics department, our medical staff, our performance department, the coaching staff, you know, the executive group, Asher, myself, like we all, even Nick Koba, who was working on visas and transition times, which, you know, we had Anali and Ponce ready for the Vancouver game, which was, you know, eligible. Anali hadn't been with us enough that we didn't dress him because of that, but we had him available. So I think we're all pretty proud in this environment here that we all had a piece to do with it. But how do you go about it? And convincing him, I think part of it is sit down and talk with the players, with their agents about the project and what we're trying to build here and the type of team that we have. The nice thing is we play soccer. We play with the ball. We believe in trying to break teams down with the ball and trying to disorganize them, create chances. And I think when a player is coming from abroad, he'll watch the game and he'll see and he'll be like, I can fit in there. I'm going to get the ball. I can score goals in a Ponce's situation. And Ollie's like, oh, you're going to isolate me on the wing? Beautiful. That's my game. Get me the ball. So I think players can see the possibilities and it's easy for them to kind of go into it. But I'll go back to Asher. I mean, he did a lot of these two. It just worked out that way. Did a lot of work on these two and he did a great job. You know, got to convince agents as well. And that takes time and energy. But, The whole process of it is really exciting and it's enjoyable to do that and have these conversations. And there are conversations you have that, you know, go flat. But both these guys, we were fortunate that they're both our number one targets and they both agreed to come and we made it work.
Good signings. Looking forward to seeing more of them. Pat, as always, thank you so much for coming on the show. Best of luck against RSL next Monday.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it.
All right. He's Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. Great stuff there. All right, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN975.com. Get the podcast of this show at Spotify, Apple, and Google or ESPN975.com. Big thank you to our presenting sponsors, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, and to you for listening in both live and by picking it up on the podcast. All right, until next week, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, Soccer Matters.